This is CliffCentral.com.
And Robbie Collins has popped into. I can't believe we've actually never really sat down and had a proper conversation before. How did this not happen up to now? How are you, dude?
I'm so good, man. I cannot complain. It's been a crazy festive already.
Just get in front of the mic. It would help.
It's been a crazy festive. Just a lot of working.
Yeah.
And nights are getting a bit later.
Yeah, for sure. Were you out last night?
Yes, I was.
And I can hear it in your voice. Sia was as well.
That's why.
He tries to hide it.
No, I need to do like vocal exercises for tonight.
Are you good, though?
I'm very good. Very good.
Is the career still on a massive ascent? It looks like you're doing really well at the moment. It seems that everybody wants a piece of you.
It's been interesting.
Yeah?
In a very positive way. It's, you know, it is, you work so hard at something you love, and then something happens, and then all of a sudden people want to get to know you a bit better, which is crazy because you do this thing for so many years and then all of a sudden something happens and then people are interested.
Are you, because you started off as an actor, right? Not even in comedy. Is that right?
Yeah, but I was like, it was more like, was theater.
Yeah.
But like Durban theater is different to Cape Town and Johannesburg theater.
Explain. I need to know what the difference is because I don't know much about theatre full stop.
Durban's changed. I started in Durban as a comedian and as an actor. Durban people didn't really believe in Durban products, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so they didn't support the local industry.
Not at all. Yeah. It's different to Cape Town and Johannesburg where there's a lot more support for the local industry than there is for Durban.
You know, I've got friends in Durban. They always complain, no, nothing funny ever happens in Durban. But when something does, they never shell out cash to go and see it.
That's the thing. It's weird. So it is a weird thing.
They moan about it, but then they never support.
No, that's exactly the thing. Like, I think about, like, my family. Like, I think there's a lot of people that have never been to a comedy show if I wasn't a comedian, if that makes sense. So the game's changed totally. Like now there's a Durban comedy scene. When I started, you'd perform to what, 8 people?
Yeah.
And you knew 4 of them?
And dude, how hard is it in the beginning? Because you know that's like 8 people and 4 of them are friends of yours. And maybe the other 4 don't even stay for the whole show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, that's tough. For anyone to start in a business and have that kind of experience, it makes it really, really tough to sit through a couple more months of struggling before you start to make it and before you start to impress audiences and more people come. And Durban must be one of the toughest environments in the whole world to start doing comedy.
Now it's changed, but back then, I call it the pre-Trevor Noah phase.
Yeah.
So
you're friends with Trevor. We'll talk about him in a minute.
Yeah, but thank you. So this is the thing. Like, before Trevor started, comedy was seen as a hobby that you tried and it might not succeed in.
Yeah, there were a handful of successful people.
There were a few, but it wasn't in everybody's houses.
No.
Like, nobody knew about South African comedy
the
way they know about it now. Yes, there were the Mark Lartrings, David Cowles. When Trevor made it big, all of a sudden he put South African stand-up comedy in everybody's house.
Yeah.
So then they go, oh, wow, this isn't just a hobby. This can actually happen.
It's a real job, and these guys are actually able to do something commercially with this.
So before that, it was like telling your family you wanted to be a stand-up comic.
It was like telling your family you want to be a trapeze artist.
Yes, exactly.
Like, oh, for God's sake, we're going to support this guy for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, so it's different now, and Durban's changed a lot compared to when I started 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. So now you can actually make money living in Durban as a comedian.
Now that's something. In Durban.
You can make more money in Durban as a comedian than you can in Cape Town.
Really?
Yes.
Is the Cape Town market a bit dry?
They just don't pay as well.
But I find that surprising as...
See us from Durban too.
Yeah. As a Durbanite, I'm just like, I know how our people are. But for Cape Town...
The right people are starting to run comedy in Durban.
But dude, you've done the heavyweight comedy jam. You've done Blacks Only. You've done a lot of big shows. Do you ever get on stage when you're doing those shows and think back to those 8 people in Durban?
Yeah, definitely.
Because you have to reflect, right? Otherwise, you don't realize how far you've come, and you like take it all for granted.
It was something crazy happened to me this year where on my 9th year anniversary of doing comedy, which was on the 9th of August 2008.
Yeah.
When I first started, I performed to 12 people. This year, on the 9th of August 2017, I performed to 12,000 people.
Oh, that's huge.
Doing the dome show with Trevor.
Wow.
So that was crazy, just that it had gone full circle, you know? Performing for one of the biggest comedians in the world and to so many people. But it's, you know, you've really got to love this thing.
Yeah, you do. And
if you don't love it, like, give up.
Then your audience aren't going to love it.
No, they're not.
If they can tell you're up there because either you think that you can make money out of this or that you are in some way over-assessing and over-emphasizing your own ability to make people laugh, it's never going to work, right?
Definitely.
Now, tell me, Trevor, as a friend, this is quite something. You've watched this guy who you've known for a long time, and he's now at the top of his game. This guy is just flying high, and he deserves everything that he's got because he's a hard worker. I mean, I sort of know him tangentially. I'm not close mates with him. But what's it like to be good friends with him? Because you performed with him on stage. You've been to see him in New York. You've visited with him. He comes out here. He sees you.
You know, it's a tough one with Trevor because I was fortunate enough to meet Trevor just before he started Daywalker.
Right.
And we toured from his first tour up until this one, this gone August. I've been fortunate enough to work with him very closely, see him build shows, and see him as a success grow. You know, like every year, hotels got better.
Yes.
flights got better. Like everything. Go. And it was so crazy as a young guy trying it out. Well, not trying it out, while entering the industry, I was kind of living this guy's success.
Yeah.
Who's so big. Like I went to stay with him in New York. And it's crazy, dude.
At his house.
At his place. And
is this that apartment that everyone's talking about?
Yeah. I'm actually going to stay with him now in Jan.
Oh, nice. Okay, tell me about the apartment. Okay. Let's just talk about this.
This is how Trevor explains it. It's a very dope apartment. Let me not try and make it seem like it's whack.
Okay.
Like you wake up and the first thing you see is the Empire State Building.
Oh.
Well, that just sets your life. Level.
Is that his view or is that the guest bedroom view?
That was my view. I don't know what his room might be.
He must be seeing Jesus. Every morning he opens his eyes and there's Jesus. Like, good morning, Trevor, my son.
But like, okay, the way he explained it, which is so true, is that people made a fuss about how much money paid, but then you go, everything in New York is expensive.
That's exactly right.
As cool as the apartment is, it's not crazy money. Like in New York, that's actually not the most expensive apartment you can get in New York. It's actually pretty reasonable.
Yeah, but also it's like in South Africa, every time you hear about someone who gets arrested, it's always their luxury car. And then they say, show a picture of the car and it's like an Elmira.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, luxury car. So in New York, you buy an apartment. If you could afford an apartment in New York, you're already making pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
But for New Yorkers, the standard goes up from there. So in other words, like there are people who live in New York who will see Trevor's apartment and go, nah.
Right.
Not good enough for me. Because New York is a different universe.
It's a packet of cigarettes, $15.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Everything is expensive.
Every restaurant you go to, you're looking at a couple of $100 and that's in dollars. It's expensive to live in New York. Yeah. So, and Trevor has, I mean, listen, he's the host of one of five major daily late night shows.
Right.
And those guys get paid a lot of money, but that's nothing compared to the kind of money that Letterman and Leno and those guys used to pay in those days. So, again, you've got to look at these things in context. And South Africans, we tend to think by a direct exchange. Like, we think, oh, well, if he were here, this is how he would be living, which is stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
He's doing work. He wakes up early in the morning,
yeah.
goes through and does the show. He's working all day. He will maybe get a little bit of free time somewhere in the afternoons.
Yeah.
Then he's back on when they record late afternoons. And that's his day every day. It's hard work.
The cool thing is, like, you see in New York, they're so used to celebrities.
Yeah.
Trevor walks to work, right? So
nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Like, there's a few people that get excited, but everybody else who's living in that area, they're like, yo, Trevor, you greet them. It's cool.
Just says.
Because, like,
it's your hood.
They used to, Robert De Niro walking down the street. They know so many different celebrities. So there's a cool level of respect for a celebrity in New York because every celebrity is in New York.
And everybody in New York is busy. You might not be a celebrity, but you're busy.
Yes.
Someone's got something to do. They don't have time to sit and it's the tourists who will ask him for photographs. New Yorkers could care less. They've got things to do.
I found it crazy, like asking somebody for directions.
They get annoyed, right?
We used to having time on our hands. Yeah. Even walking into a grocery store and greeting the person who's serving you, there's some sort of respect and friendliness.
The till and the woman who puts the stuff in the bag, and you're like, hello, mom, hello, sissy, how are you? You know?
Yeah, you can have a conversation.
In fact, South Africans always go, how are you? That doesn't happen in New York.
No, New York is very, like, it's standoffish. It's like, why are you trying to figure out how I'm doing?
What's your angle?
Yeah. But it's, look, to answer the question, being friends with somebody like Trevor, the great thing is he's still the same dude.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what everybody tells me.
Like, he's still there just playing FIFA in his room. Like, that's his thing. It's there's private jets now, but it's...
Hello.
Yeah.
Which was very difficult for me coming back to South Africa and getting on a Kulula flight.
See, I've got friends I've stayed with in New York, and they live this incredible life, right?
Dude.
And then you get back on the plane, and you come back here, and you're suddenly stuck in like traffic from O.R. Tambo, and you're like, I feel poor.
No, it's not even poor.
Poor.
Yeah, I was angry. My first domestic flight, I was just angry the whole way there. I was just like, too many
baby
poor people
in the background.
Because you think it's
bags.
You, right? And yes. I mean, like, when I'm with these people that I know in New York too, you go, I could get used to this.
Yeah.
And then you feel somehow that you are entitled to that from there on in.
It's great. Look, with a private jet, you can never miss a private jet. They have to wait for you. Like, you literally, it was so crazy for me. Like, you literally drive onto
right up
the runway.
To the plane. Yeah.
You get off the plane. You get off the, get out the car and into the plane. Which
and
has Wi-Fi.
It's wooden paneling.
Dude, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
No checking in. Who checks your documentation?
They don't.
Someone deals with that.
They actually don't. Unless you're flying internationally, they don't care. Like, they literally don't care, dude.
The pilot's done all the paperwork in terms of where they're going. And you're in the
now,
country,
how do you operate in those circles with people who are used to it now? You try to not freak out.
Yeah. So, for example, like, we're at the Comedy Cellar, and Chris Rock rocks up.
Yeah.
Performs. Does his thing. We meet him, whatever. Very cool. Because comedians, it's a respect for, I'm sure you know, like, once you know another person in your industry, there's some sort of respect.
You can learn things from each other, but you're not going to be a fanboy and, like, start screaming.
That happens.
But Chris Rock, I'd start screaming.
Yeah, that's
it. He was very cool. 15 minutes later, the show ends. 15 minutes later, Dave Chappelle rocks up.
Oh, wow.
With the Roots.
Oh,
that, wow.
Dave Chappelle's like my idol, bro. Yeah. So, but Jim always says this to me. He's like, yo, when you meet these people you love so much, just be cool. So you want them to be your friend. You don't want them to shut you off if you fangirl too hard.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's chilling there. He's offering us cigarettes.
This is Dave Chappelle.
And then he finds out we're from South Africa. So if you know, when Dave Chappelle walked off the Comedy Central show, the Chappelle show.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
When he turned down the 50 million, he came to Durban, South Africa. So once he found out we were from South Africa, he kind of freaked out, joined us.
And when we heard you were from Durban.
Yeah. And then, like, interested. His brother lives in Isipingo.
What?
You know,
wait, that's you like, know, is also from
that
the
is
States.
So shit.
Dude, Isipingo is the worst place in Durban.
It's the worst.
What?
And then he just chills and talks.
Mfundo, do you know Isipingo? Mfundo's up here from Durban too. He's interning with us this week.
Isipingo's the worst place in Durban.
Tell me something about Isipingo I don't know. Mfundo's our intern for the week. Tell us.
Well, I've been to the parts of Isipingo where there's more like my African people. Not the fancy one. Maybe he lives in the fancy parts of
Isipingo. There's no fancy parts.
But I know it's not a fancy place, Isipingo.
Isipingo is just between after Umlazi and between Amanzimtoti. So somewhere in the middle there.
It's like factories and then shacks. Yes. Yeah.
That's
where Chappelle's brother lives?
Yeah.
Why did he move there?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Maybe he's down and out.
But Dave's Dave also lives on a farm in Ohio.
So he's still living on a farm.
He's such an interesting guy. I mean, I've read a lot about Dave Chappelle. What I find fascinating about him is that he's turned down things and he's got out of the public eye and he really only does stuff he's interested in doing.
Right.
Which I have such respect for. I mean, who in their right mind turns down a massive $50 million contract from Comedy Central to do that show? Who does that?
And then get $60 million from Netflix 10 years later.
It's delayed gratification, but you don't know that when you're saying no to the 50.
It's it's the cool thing. I feel like the internet has made the world a lot smaller. So when I started comedy, there was Facebook. There wasn't Twitter. There wasn't Instagram. So as a comedian, you were experiencing things in your own head or with the people just around you. Now
it was real.
It was very real and it was very difficult because you don't have examples of people on your level going through certain things. So now with the internet and where you can read articles and all that stuff, like Dave Chappelle, like it's a great thing for a young comedian to teach you about a little bit about integrity. Like, I feel like we're at a stage where people are so quick to sell themselves to get to a certain level. And that was something I picked up with Chappelle, where he just has this thing of, and he calls himself the king of dying on stage. So that's why, like, if you go to a Dave Chappelle show, they put your phone in a little pocket, they lock the pocket. You can keep it on you, but you can't open it until the end of the show.
As an audience member.
Because we watched him at the Cellar. He performed 2 hours. The last 30 minutes, he was bombing on stage. As if you don't know what bombing is, it means
it's terrible.
They're not laughing.
He's failing. No one's laughing. It's a disaster.
The next night, he started this historic run at the Radio City Hall. Mm-hmm. So Radio we went City through musical. To watch that. So for 20 nights, he did his show. And then he had people close the show for him. So that night, he happened to have Anderson .Paak, Lil Wayne, The Roots, Fat Joe.
What? Yes.
And it was crazy, but the next night, he performed, and it was flawless. But his thing is, that's why he doesn't allow cell phones, is that as a comedian, you've got to give yourself space to fail.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with social media these days, one joke gets taken out of context. Someone films one thing, and then they say, "Oh, this person is a racist, sexist, misogynist.
Exactly.
This guy is anti-women or whatever." You're telling
it's not even funny.
You're telling a joke. I mean, Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld. I hate to keep bringing this up, but it's something that I thought was very, very interesting. About 2.5 years ago, both of them said they will not play at colleges in the U.S. anymore because it's too PC.
Yeah.
And they get every joke is at someone's expense, right? Every joke is making fun of someone or something.
Right.
And if you don't get that, you shouldn't be sitting in a comedy show.
Yeah, man. It's like going to a UFC fight and getting angry when you see blood. Yeah. It's like you know exactly what's happening.
Thank you.
And it's not that these people are bad. It's that as a comedian, your job is to make light of serious shit. That you do, you know, like there's certain things where you've got, it's so serious you got to be like, Let's be silly about it for a second. I feel the thing with Twitter, I don't know how you feel about it. Twitter's a great thing, but then everybody deserves an opinion. Not everybody's opinion deserves to be heard.
That's a good way of looking at it.
I feel like there's certain people just get too excited because they have some data and they can say something.
Right.
And I'm like, yo.
And normally, no one would pay any attention to these people.
Yeah. Like, I remember walking off stage and somebody hated on me on Twitter and they're like, you suck. And then I wanted to say something back. And then I was like, okay, you have 40 followers. I'm not going to entertain you. But that's a thing. So that's why, like, Dave Chappelle, they don't allow, like, in the comedy clubs in New York, because there's so many big acts that rock up at a club and just do do an hour, do two hours.
And these guys really do just pitch up and...
Yeah.
And you could turn around and the next thing you have a Chris Rock or a Louis C.K. or a Dave Chappelle on stage.
But you see, that's why they... If you bring your phone out at a comedy club, whether you're messaging somebody, either you leave or your phone gets taken. It's that simple. And I feel... And I see South Africans, we're getting to a point where we're living through the phone a lot more. We've always been on the phone from mixer days or whatever, but I feel like we now, because Wi-Fi is becoming more frequent, that we're starting to capture more things on our phone through Instagram and stuff. And then you're like, as a comedian, we need the elements of surprise. So you cannot take our joke.
And it's that idea of like someone taking a picture of the Grand Canyon when they're at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
You're experiencing this amazing thing with your own eyes and you want to take a picture of it?
Yeah, I just feel like people are more interested in happening on social media than happening in real life. Where social media is amazing, but we can start to abuse this thing.
Oh.
And it's getting to that level where, like, some people have WhatsApp story, Facebook story, Insta story, Snapchat.
It's too much, right?
I'm like, how much are you living? I just find it really weird and hectic.
But you use it as a marketing vehicle. I mean, you have to, right?
Yeah, I don't go on Twitter anymore.
You don't like Twitter at all?
I haven't been on Twitter since May.
Because it's become such a shitty place, really.
The thing is, with Twitter, I find I can't control it. On Instagram, if I follow you, I'm seeing what you want to show me.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, you can retweet people's tweets, and now I'm dealing with what you putting on my timeline.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's no filter to what I'm exposing myself to.
So I reckon what they should do with Twitter is they should say, depending on your number of followers, that's how far your retweet will go. In other words,
so dope.
Yeah. So if your share of voice. So if you are someone with 10 followers, you should only be able to retweet anything to 10 people.
That's true, though.
If you have 1,000 followers, you can send it to 1,000 people.
Yeah.
You don't get to choose, but it sends to those 1,000 only.
Right.
In other words, it's not just you can't. It can't ever go further than that.
Right.
You can't have some nobody who's looking for attention and takes a picture of their asshole. And it can't ever go further than that.
No, totally. It's with all these things, it starts off as a positive and people somehow make it negative.
Mm-hmm.
But Twitter at the same time has also made comedy a lot harder. I don't know if you noticed, like, where South African comedians aren't doing political jokes anymore.
It's too messy.
First of all, I think we all just don't know what the hell's going on right now to even talk about it. We're all trying to figure it out
and
together.
And politics has become not funny.
Yeah, man. There's,
you know?
Right now, for me, with politics, I feel like Julius Malema is kind of making the most sense out of everyone. Where he was the joke, now I'm going, no, he's the one saying the real stuff, where everybody else is kind of just figuring their way out, like, through this whole thing. So comedians can't talk about it because we don't know exactly what's happening. So I feel lots of comedians have gone more personal in their comedy or observationals and leaving politics alone. The other thing is, Twitter has hilarious people.
Yeah, but everyone does think they're a comedian and they're not.
No, they're not.
This drives me crazy because if I go to a comedy show, I know that there's a professional person on stage whose job it is to make people laugh, and they've thought about their material.
Oh, right.
And they've tested it in front of a bunch of other people before they've charged me money. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into comedy. Just because you're funny on Twitter doesn't mean you're going to be funny in a comedy show. But
you see what's happened? I feel like memes have changed comedy.
They're great, huh?
They freaking hilarious, dude. Like, you know, so for example, have you ever watched a soccer game? Something happens, but halftime there's freaking 5 memes.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I'm like, how are you making these memes?
People do them like that.
Dude, it's like this, and they've thrown in another thing, and now the meme is involving the soccer game you're watching and Star Wars. Like, how did you even put these two things together?
Straight away.
So what's happened is, where's a comedian, if something happened today, if something happened yesterday or on Monday, I have a good few days to work out a joke to do in the club.
Yeah.
But now with Twitter and memes and people are hilarious, they've worked every angle of their joke. So by the time you get on stage...
There's nothing left.
there's no way to talk about the thing because they've made a trend for the past freaking 2 days or whatever, and they've hit it with every angle. So that's what makes it more difficult.
Let me ask you one other thing about social media, because people go back and they will drag up any shit from like 6 to 8 to 10 years ago, right? And they did this with Trevor.
They
found some tweet that he, when he was in context, he was telling a joke about women or something, and some like lunatic goes into his timeline and finds something that must have taken them hours and hours and hours to find.
Right.
And then they try to paint him as being some sort of misogynist. And they did the same thing with AKA last week. They found some tweet of his where he's like, 2017 is going to be my year or whatever, which is, I mean, you know what? You're allowed to be positive. You're allowed to think you're going to have a great year. They find that and they're like, yo, look, Casper had a better year than you. He's mean.
Firstly, I don't even know how these people
these
do
mean,
it.
Who are these fucking ass? Who are these people who do this?
It's insecure people. You know, it's...
You're friends with AK as well.
Yeah.
Did he see that thing? Did he tell you he's going to go and shoot anybody?
No. You know what I'm realizing? Like, we love putting people on a level to bring them down.
Yeah, Trevor's seen this too,
and I've seen people.
Do you know how many people when he went to America were saying, oh, they'd say that they'd come to me and they'd whisper, they'd go, it's nice for Trevor, huh? And I'd go, yeah, I'm very happy for him. They'd go, he's not going to succeed.
Yeah,
what remember that? It's a mean small person. It's a kind of insecurity. You're right.
You know, people don't understand. There's a level of success to everyone. And I think that's a big thing. See, with the AK, I haven't seen AK for like 2 months,
mm-hmm.
but it's not even defending him here. It's the thing, there's a level of success for everyone.
Yeah.
So AK is doing great. You know what I mean?
He's still doing better than every one of those people who were saying, oh, look at you, AK.
Yeah. Casper's doing great,
yeah.
but they're pushing for a different thing.
Right.
Like, you can't be angry at a person because the one's trying to do that and the other one's trying to do that. Your level of success to my level of success is a different thing. It doesn't mean that you're less talented. It's you aiming for a different thing. Casper is trying to fill up. He filled up the dome.
He pretty much filled up F&B.
Yeah. He did amazing with that. And that's dope. AKA is pushing for something else.
But dude, you know why I believe you know this? I believe you understand this. It's because you are doing your thing. You're out there, you're performing, you've got your own kind of success that you're measuring yourself by, and it's been amazing, right? So far, your career has been phenomenal. But you don't go to Trevor's apartment in New York and start getting jealous.
No.
And start comparing yourself with him.
You know, when Trevor got The Daily Show, lots of South African comics, and I heard in the comedy clubs, there was lots of jealousy. And I said to a friend of mine who's also a comedian, I was like, you know, the problem is with all this jealousy is that they jealous for a dream they didn't have.
Yeah.
Does it make sense?
Okay. Yeah, like, they never wanted to be on The Daily Show.
Gareth gets a Grammy. Now I'm angry at Gareth for getting a Grammy, but I'm a comedian. I'm like, why am I even, you know what I mean? Like,
okay. Why
am I involving myself in something I didn't even know existed? So The Daily Show, lots of South Africans only heard about The Daily Show when Trevor got The Daily
Correct.
Show.
And then they were angry about it.
Then I'm like, why are you angry about a thing you didn't...
But you know what it is, and I need to ask you about this because it came up yesterday in the show. We were talking about this guy, the professor in Canada, who says, if you want to change the world, you right. start with you.
Yes.
Like, start with tidying your room.
Right.
Start with, like, making yourself a healthy breakfast. Little things. Then when you've got all of that right, then you can start with the rest of the house. Then you can go to your yard. Then you can go to your street. Once you go into your street, you can go to your whole neighborhood. Once you've done something good for the whole neighborhood, then you can help the city. But you don't start with the world and move inward.
For
you
sure.
start with yourself and move outward.
I listen to, you know, those I don't know if you've seen them on YouTube, those colleges in the States, and they always have like a guest speaker.
A commencement speech.
Yeah. And there's a guy, I forget his name, and he said, don't worry about succeeding. The problem is when you don't fail now and then. And I was like, that's the thing. Because there's very little growth in success. So you must remember, before Trevor got The Daily Show, he also had a pilot that was produced by Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith that failed.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows about that. That thing was short-lived. There was an article, and then it was, oh, it didn't get picked up, boom.
Didn't get green lighted. Yeah.
And then people were happy. And then there's another thing that failed as well. And then the Daily Show came along. So
And he was the first one to say that he wasn't even the first choice for the Daily Show. No. In other words, there's other people who turned it down. So there's a bit of luck, but there's a huge amount of hard work.
Definitely.
And there is no reason that you should be involving yourself in whether or not someone else deserves something or not. Get on with your own life.
I feel like you have two choices in life. Like, you either hate a person or you take that envy and put it into practice and work hard. You know, there's the difference between bitterness and anger. Maya Angelou said, bitterness eats upon the soul. Anger, you can use it.
Yeah.
You can create something with anger. Bitterness, you just sit there and until it starts eating you up.
Yeah.
You know?
But you mentioned failure just now, and you need a little bit of failure. Comics experience this every time they're on stage, right? Because you don't know whether the joke you're about to deliver that you've thought about for a long time.
Right.
You don't know this thing's going to land badly. And then that crowd are going to turn on you. And there is nothing worse. Nothing is harder in any entertainment business in the world than a stand-up comedy gig. Because those people, if they don't like you, they let you know.
Oh, dude, there's nothing in life that prepares you.
And it doesn't matter how big you are. You can be the biggest star in the world. You go on stage at a comedy gig, they will eat you for breakfast.
It actually becomes harder the bigger you get. Because then there's an expectation. You know, there's a difference. This is why lots of comedians and people say, oh, so-and-so is no more funny. It's not that they're no more funny. They've gotten to such a level, they're no more living in your world. Mm-hmm. If you go watch Michael Jackson, you want to hear Billie Jean. Mm-hmm. You don't want to hear the stuff he thought about last night. And he's like, oh, here's a new one, guys. No, do Billie Jean.
Right.
As a comedian,
and
they get
measured against that the whole time.
Yeah.
Right?
Michael Jackson could have performed until he was freaking 80. We'd have watched Billie Jean, whether the moonwalk was slow, whatever. We'd be like, do the Billie Jean thing. Comedy, they go, you funny. We like that joke. Oh, you're doing it again. We like that joke. Third time you do that joke, they go, you suck.
Old material.
And they hate you. So it's that's the whole thing where all these big comedians no more have. They don't want cell phones. They need space to fail, to do what they did, and for them to be at a level where you enjoy them, because that's why lots of comics, they go from their first and second DVD being great, and it starts dropping because now people aren't listening anymore. It's that crazy.
And this trend, like for a while, you're trendy because you're the new kid on the block, and I mean, I suppose anybody in any career goes through that stage where they're new and they're fresh to it, they're putting their all into it, and then they kind of peak at some point and it starts to drop off. And then you have to reinvent it and come back with something better, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think
do you feel that pressure a lot?
I'm in the in between where I'm getting some fame, so it's when people bring out their phones when I'm on stage. It's almost like a lady said to me, I said, please put your phone away. Just enjoy the moment. And she said, just be grateful I'm taking a picture. And I just, I laughed so hard, but it was very much like a mom be like, yo, just shut up and smile at the
shut up, child.
Just, yeah, but it was, I found it funny. So it's an in between where some people get excited. Mm. And then also there's that thing of, oh, he's that guy from that thing. You know when you're seeing somebody and they're not even listening, they're trying to figure out, they're like tapping their friend like, it's that guy. So it's a different, this is my thing. I never ever wanted to be famous. I wanted to be going into comedy, always wanted to be appreciated as a comedian. There's a difference. I think we go too crazy on this fame thing.
Yeah.
Where people are more worried
it's
about
a drug, man.
Like the Kardashians and stuff. I'm going, you so famous, but what are you offering the world?
Nothing. There's
like
no value.
If you swap the Kardashian family, we are, as a society in the world, we are not going to miss out anything.
No. No, if a huge asteroid just took out their house,
we carry on.
Everything would be the same. Not one thing would get better or worse.
The only person in their family who will leave us with anything is Caitlyn Jenner. Because we've got Olympic highlights to see. And Kanye.
And so much material, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Caitlyn material has got to be... There's no ceiling to the amount of laughter I can generate out of Caitlyn Jenner in my head.
It's ridiculous. So... That's why I'm like,
you're right. Kanye deserves a bit of credit.
Yeah, Kanye.
If Kanye were wiped out, I think we'd miss out on a lot.
They gave us vocal frying, though.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that's Bible. Bible.
So speaking of the Bible, did you fall asleep once in church and then you were asleep the whole way through and you woke up right at the end?
Oh yeah, many times. Okay, my mom was a nun before she got married.
Seriously?
No, I'm not even joking. Like, I grew up in the church as an altar server, everything. So my mom was a nun in Cape Town. I'm from Durban.
Catholic
nun. So before you say your final vows to become, I don't know what you call it,
sister, whatever of the
So the convent told my mom she must go and teach, and just because she was very young at the time, so she's like 21. So in that time,
did she grow up in a really strict family, or was it something she wanted?
Yeah, it was a very she chose to go. She was always part of the church, and then she wanted to become a nun, but the convent or the mother superior, she told my mom, like, I think you're a bit too young to make this commitment. Maybe just go and teach for a bit. And my mom is now a teacher. And in that 2-year period, she met my dad and then got married. Now, 5 kids later.
Well, that was a good decision. But we'd have no Robbie Collins if she decided to close that whole world up for herself and never get out there, huh? So, Sister in Violata. Sister in Violata, you could have had a really funny son. Could have added some spice to the society. I'm going to call her that. Tell your mother, Sister in Violata, we say howzy.
So, I grew up in the church. So,
did she ever dress up in the habit afterwards?
Just for old time's sake.
Does she ever? You should buy one for Halloween, dude. You should totally buy her one for Halloween.
They actually call us the Von Trapp family at school because I have 5 siblings. Yeah, so there's so many of us, and then I'm being the nun. If you know the sound of music, you know the story. So yeah. So to answer your question, I've fallen asleep in church many times. My brother once. Because Durban, you know Durban's summer humidity. And as an altar server, you had to wear all those
robes and things.
The one year, my brother, we holding candles together on the altar. This dude just collapses.
Shame, man.
So it was like, my mom loves church. Like, my mom's in church tonight. She'll be in church tomorrow. She'll be in church on Sunday. Like,
do you kids ever get together and discuss how you've stolen away the nun life that she could have had?
The nun life.
You ruined that the nun life.
The nun life.
That nun life could have been hers.
Hashtag.
I don't know if it's. I've fallen asleep in church many times. My mom gets upset because as a comedian, it's very difficult waking up on a Sunday for church. So I don't go as often as I should go. I've been gigging in the week. I'm gigging every day.
Yeah.
And like Sunday, you just want to sleep in, man.
Speaking of that, you're not here for your health. Give a couple of plugs. You must be doing a lot over December. December's prime time, right? People are out watching comedy.
It is. Like the 23rd, we calm down.
Okay, give it a plug.
So this week in Johannesburg, I'm going to be at Parker's tonight, Parker's Monte Casino tonight and tomorrow. And I'm going to be at the Goliath Comedy Club tonight as well. So
beautiful.
And then next week, I'm going to be in Durban for the Durban Comedy Jam, Summer Comedy Jam, the festival. It's the 3rd year.
Right.
And that's from the 20th until the 23rd. And you can go to Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, follow On Fire Comedy, and they will have all the details for you. Tickets available.
It's quite a lineup.
Everybody is there.
Loisa Matinga, John Flismas, Joey Razdeen, Glenn Biederman Pam, yourself.
Loisa Gola. Yeah,
Listen, dude, I'm sorry that we haven't got a chance to speak before now, because I think we would have gotten along a lot sooner.
Definitely.
Had you around a lot more. So
I've been a fan. You know what I like about you? I've always admired is that you say things that many people are afraid to say. And I think we live in a society where everybody's PC.
Yeah.
And we
don't want to live like that.
No. People are afraid to give their opinion before they find out everybody's opinion. and
what's the general consensus?
Yes. Oh, let me go. How do we feel?
I really want to be famous and I want to do what I do well and I want people to give me success, but I don't want to put myself in a place where I could be unpopular.
May I ask you a question? Like,
yeah.
Don't you feel there is a responsibility you have to say things? Like having this platform, you don't, not a responsibility like you're going to help the world, but to yourself where you go, I need to say something that's different from the other person. Or something that's, you know, it's, for me, when I'm on stage and I do a joke that's real to how I feel or real to an experience, it's more rewarding.
Feels good,
than the joke you've kind of just played with or made up. So that's what I'm saying. Like, there's something special in...
I think it's just living an authentic life. I think it's just like being... You've got to be comfortable in your own skin.
Definitely.
And I mean, that's what I take from you guys. I see Levinson out there. He's crazy as well. But, you know, Robbie, you comedians...
Oh, he's you make me
You make me very happy because you guys do this every night. And you do it live and you do it in front of an audience. And it's... You're adding... layers to the culture of this country. That's spectacular. And although I don't get to go to comedy shows because I hardly leave my house anymore, I'm so antisocial. I love talking to comedians. They're some of the most thoughtful people in the world because they're thinking not only of how to make things funny, but about what people care about.
Yeah.
All the time.
You're having a conversation with 200 people at the same time. And taking into consideration all of their feelings on everything.
Yeah.
Like, you're on stage. You can do a joke on stage, and it gets a massive laugh and applause. And that one dude that didn't laugh will catch your eye.
Yeah.
And you're like,
it'll ruin
everything. I need to break him. So it's a difficult thing where sometimes you can forget about the people who are loving you, and you're just like, I need to break this dude.
Yeah.
Before I walk off the stage, this guy need to be laughing or clapping.
Yeah.
And it's a tough one. I remember once, like, going, because my first 10 gigs as a comedian, I did not die. It went really well.
Nice.
I killed.
Like, this thing is amazing.
Yeah.
Me.
Maybe
it was that,
good. I was like, you know, I'm so
maybe,
natural.
Maybe if that hadn't happened, you would have given up.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank God it did.
Because the 10th gig, my self-esteem was not prepared. Eh? It wasn't. Dude, there was a lady in the front who was eating a steak. And I told her, I forget what joke
I
told.
I hate it when people eat while there's something like that
going
on. But
she looked up at me. And she locked eyes with me and she just shook her head and carried on eating.
Oh my God.
Dude, I still remember her face. I was like, that's the coldest thing I've ever seen in my life, bro.
So the lady with the steak,
she just shook
still broken Robbie's heart, wherever you are.
Sure. I remember just
shook her head.
She just shook her head like, what are you doing, boy? Go sit.
All right, dude. Listen, happy Christmas and New Year and
you
all that
too,
stuff.
You too, man.
Tell Sister and Violate we'll be attending Christmas Mass on the 24th with her.
There we go.
And dude, keep doing your work. We love it.
Thank you so much,
right,
bro.
Man.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Robbie Collins, everybody. Get to see him. He's at Parker's Red tonight.
Tonight.
Goliath Comedy Club 2 over the weekend. Make sure you book your tickets ASAP.
This is CliffCentral.com.